Steve, thanks very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And in studio with us, two guests. Jill Weinberg is the Midwest Director of the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. Mally Rutkoff is the daughter of two Holocaust survivors. Her mother was an Auschwitz survivor. Her father survived by hiding during the war. Ladies, thank you both for being here. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Bill and Wendy.
Thank you so much. I knew that there was a museum here in the North Shore, Holocaust Museum. Where is that?
In Skokie, Illinois.
In Skokie. I want to go visit that. I'm Catholic, and I grew up in Brookfield, and there weren't very many Jewish people around.
Yeah.
And I know what we learned in school, and I'm shocked and appalled when I hear this stuff, but to see something at these museums, I can't even imagine that.
Let's talk about the Washington, D.C. Museum for a little bit and what's happening this weekend, because this is very big news. Go ahead.
This weekend will be a first-time gathering of children of Holocaust survivors at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
For two solid days, the museum scholars, teachers, experts will talk to us about our experiences during growing up with people who survived an unbelievable atrocity and had the courage and the determination to rebuild families, and we are those children.
Was the propensity, and I know that every story is different, but for the survivors who lived through this horrible, horrible event, was the propensity to talk about it or to not want to talk about it as their life progressed?
It varied from family to family. My mom had a tattoo on her arm, so I knew very young that that meant that she was different than my friends' mothers who didn't have those.
Yeah.
What I learned mostly came as a child from listening to her tell the stories to her American neighbors and friends who were not survivors.
It's just so, I can't even imagine it. And explain the tattoo.
The Nazis tattooed men and women and children, and their numbers usually indicated what concentration camps, slave labor camps, that they were with.
When your mother would recount stories of what had happened to her when she was younger, it's so emotional. How was she able to get through these stories without breaking down, or did she break down?
You know, I would remember hearing her cry at nights when she believed we were sleeping.
Yeah.
And struggled with the loss of her parents and siblings and extended families and way of life. But I believe that she and my dad really wanted us to grow up to be regular kids. They wanted us to live a life aware of what they had lost, but not staying in the darkness with
them.
And it seems back in those times, no one really went into their innermost feelings and revealed that to people.
Well, Wendy, it's a great observation, because not only has, over the years, the awareness of survivors changed. In the early years when survivors came, our community wanted them to get on with life. They believed that the horrors of what they had endured was over, and it was time for them to build a life. My parents were liberated when they were both 22 years old in different places. So when they came here, they were in their 20s, and they were eager to get back to a new, normal, free way of life. So they did. They brushed themselves off. They got jobs. They saved money. They wanted a home and children, which to me is one of the most incredible parts, that they, after what they saw and endured and lost, they had the confidence to go ahead and believe in raising a family.
Seems like a pretty scary world that they saw, and it would be scary to bring children into it.
Absolutely. And over the years, as for survivors, as time progressed, we became aware of what they lived through and what they endured, and then in many cases, what the survivors have added to our world. Many of them have been successful in business and education and culture, and we look back now and realize that on top of how they rebuilt their lives, often being the only one of an extended family to be part of that.
And you wonder, with all the people that perished, if one of those survivors maybe was the one person who could have found a cure for cancer or something. You never know, and you always wonder.
You know, more than a million children perished during the Holocaust. What would one of those lives have meant? So by coming to the museum this weekend with this group of 125 children, some partners and spouses, are going to study what the museum is dedicating its mission to, and that is how they preserve the memory, how they teach generations to come. And one of the tremendous assets of the museum is how they use this voice to influence current-day genocides that are going on.
Kim Gordon, who works up in the news department, is a friend of both of yours, and she was explaining to me how, in many cases, the children of the Holocaust survivors were learning more about their parents, things that they didn't know about their own parents, through this, correct?
My own experience. I've been active in the Midwest office of the United States Holocaust Museum here in Chicago for over 20 years. And a few years ago, the International Tracing Service, which was documents that the Nazis held closely, released its information, and the U.S. Holocaust Museum is one of the repositories of those documents. And Jill Weinberg, who's here with me, asked me to put in my mother's tattoo number and let's see what came up. And in 2 days, the museum was able to find for me the names and places and dates of all the camps, slave labor camps and ghettos that my mother had been in from 1940 to 45.
They kept very extensive records.
Immaculate records.
Yeah.
And all we needed was her tattoo number off her arm. But my mom died when I was 19 and she was only 49, so I couldn't really ask her about that.
Yeah.
So I went to a jewelry box that I have of hers with a piece of paper. And in it, written in her hand, were the names and the dates of places that... But I didn't know that. I just thought they were things she wanted to remember.
Yeah.
They matched what the museum had in its records.
You think about, now we know about post-traumatic stress disorder and our veterans, yesterday being Veterans Day. They come home. They need help. Imagine the help that these survivors needed when they came home and didn't have anything.
No, because as you said, Wendy, that was a generation where you dusted yourself off and you went on and you built your life.
I always wonder when somebody is that close to something so devastating like the concentration camps and the Holocaust, how you find joy in other things in life. Was your mother able to rebound enough to where things genuinely made her happy after experiencing this?
Absolutely.
She was, good.
The survivor community I grew up in universally, both my parents and others, found joy in their children. They were probably could be accused of being overprotective, but understandably so. They wanted the success of what we enjoyed were things that reflected on them. You know, it's funny when you use the word children. We're people now in our 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But yet we were the hope that they brought out of this horrible experience. And from us come new generations. And so their lives mattered because of that.
Do you think in any way, shape, or form, you seemed somewhat surprised that they came home and wanted to have children, but to see all those children perish, was that their way of recreating life again?
Absolutely, and of building their own families. I mean, many people who survived were the only one person from a large extended family, and so this gave them family again.
Jill Weinberg is the Midwest director of the U.S. Holocaust Museum. Jill, let's talk about the experience of the museum itself. When people visit there, what are they seeing exactly?
The fact that well over 90% of the visitors to the museum are not Jewish is one of the most extraordinary aspects of it, that we're hearing from Mally a really unique experience of the children of survivors going on this trip and having this very, very personal experience. But for the masses of the visitors to the museum, they are not familiar with this subject matter, certainly not familiar personally with this. And how do you take that visitor through the museum and help them to understand the enormity of this chapter in our history of these crimes? And so from the time the visitor enters the museum, they're hearing the voice of the American soldier, because this is an American institution,
mm-hmm.
helping the visitor to understand, why is this museum so important to American history? Why is this located in our nation's capital? Why is this on the Mall in Washington, D.C.? And so the first thing that the visitor hears is the American soldier saying how unprepared they were themselves for what they were about to see, and then the doors open and the first site that the viewer sees is of the concentration camp. And then it walks the visitor through the history from before the war, because none of this happened with concentration camps. It is helping people to understand the steps that took place long before we got to killing centers.
Sure.
And what did you say the percentage was of people that weren't Jewish who wanted to find out? Because that's why I'd like to go. I'm not familiar with this the way you are.
And the fact that over 90% of the visitors to the museum are not Jewish is truly significant. And that statistic has risen right from the beginning. So when this museum opened 23 years ago, the vast numbers of Jews who have a incredible investment in this have visited. And of course, when you think statistically about the numbers of people in this country, it is quite interesting that those numbers have grown. The other thing that has grown as well is the number of international visitors to the museum, that you have over 100 heads of state that have visited the museum. And this museum, which started as a national museum, also is very, very involved and invested in international issues at this point as well.
I'm guessing just a simple walk through the museum is incredibly emotional for a lot of people, isn't it?
For everyone, I bet.
Absolutely.
In different ways.
And we used to define the visitor to the museum as the person who actually walked through the doors of the museum.
Yeah.
And that is over 20 million people who have walked through the doors of the museum. But in fact, and it's to close to 2 million visitors every single year have walked through the doors of the museum. But now we've redefined the visitor because so many people, when this museum opened, there wasn't a website, there wasn't the internet. And now, because the museum has such an incredible website and the website is in 15 different languages, it allows the visitor to be that person, whether they're in Europe, whether they're in Egypt, to be able to visit this museum and find the answers to their questions.
We're going to talk more about the big event, which is this weekend, the second generation mission trip to Washington, D.C. for children of survivors. It's taking place this weekend. I know this is short notice because this weekend is coming up in just a day or so. But if people want to get involved, this is the first time you've done this. You hope to do this more times in the future.
But people are texting, how can I get involved? How can I go with? Is there a website to go to?
Yes, there is. USHMM.org is the website for the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum. It is an extraordinary website where people can find out how to visit the museum in Washington. People can find out by going to the Midwest page. People can find out about all of the activities that are happening locally in Chicago. We have many events that are free and open to the public that are constant educational opportunities to update people on what's going on. Teachers who want to learn about how to access information about how to teach the Holocaust can go to the website. It is vast in terms, Mally mentioned about the museum's focus on current day issues and looking at early warning signs of other genocides.
Yeah.
So people can and must access that website to see the vast, vast information that
it's,
exists.
It's USHMM.org. That's your best bet to get to the website. And then there's tabs to click on for events and second generation if you want to know more about this particular event. Let's come back and talk more with Jill Weinberg, the Midwest director of the U.S. Holocaust Museum, and Mally Rutkoff, the daughter of two Holocaust survivors. We're at 312-981-7200 if you want to jump in. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, two guests in studio with us right now. Jill Weinberg is the Midwest director of the U.S. Holocaust Museum in Washington, D.C. Mally Rutkoff is the daughter of two Holocaust survivors. Her mother was at Auschwitz, where she survived, thankfully. Her father survived just by hiding out. You started to tell us all a story about when you visit. You bring a picture of your mother with you, don't you?
I carry a photo that she had taken right after the war in the displaced persons camp. And she holds her arm with the tattoo number and points at it as if to say, this is my mark forever.
Yeah.
And certainly she's not alone. They were definitely marked.
Yeah.
And men and women, children, and a mark that stayed with them for their whole lives.
We got a text here that I would like to share with you, ladies. Bill and Wendy took a group of eighth graders to Washington, D.C. many years ago. Loved how they were given a little book that had information about a person who was in a concentration camp during the war. It wasn't until the end of the tour that the students were able to find out what happened to their person. Can your guests talk a little about that?
So when each visitor walks into the museum, they are given an ID card, and it is an actual person who went through the Holocaust. And it is for the men, they may take a man, for a woman, and it talks about where that person is from. And at each different point in the museum, they are tracked through the paces of what that person experienced. And the concept is that when you think about the 6 million Jews who were murdered during the Holocaust, it is very difficult for anyone to fathom what that those numbers mean. But if we can begin to identify with that one visitor that we take with us, that we are literally traveling through this experience with, that is much more able to be comprehended. And many, many, many people tell me that years later, they are still holding on to those ID cards because that is one of their strongest connections to the museum.
Wendy, you were just questioning bringing the boys there. I'm guessing mostly because Dylan is a little bit younger, but it is one of those things, even though it can be a very, very hard lesson for anybody, not just a kid, to see what went on, it's such an important lesson.
It is. It's something they need to know about, and the schools don't really go in depth, you know? Another text, my father was Jewish, family never talked about that time. I'm in my 50s and unfortunately know nothing of what happened to my family from that terrible time, and I'm sure there's a lot of people in that situation.
And the museum will be happy, just like in my experience, to take the bits of information they have and go through these documents that came out of Germany just a few years ago and search and be able to look and see what information can be shared
right. That
gives an indication of where their parents might have been, where relatives might have perished, what might have happened to extended family. Sometimes there isn't anything, but quite often there is.
It's not unusual, as this person wrote in, for families not to talk about this subject matter, and clearly we can understand that. And as someone who's been working very closely with this material and with these people since even before the museum was built, Mally spoke earlier about how her family did, how her parents did speak somewhat. But many, many, many survivors' children will tell you that they know nothing as this person did and how frustrating it is.
And so, they didn't want to ask either. I mean, I know they were curious as a child, but you didn't want to bring up painful information from your parents.
Exactly. You knew it was too painful. And there are times when actually Holocaust survivors have started talking to me because I am safe, but they didn't want to burden their own children. And their own children have said, I can't believe my mother told you that. She won't tell me because it's too difficult. And Mally said all they wanted was for their children to have
a normal
life. Exactly. And what's interesting is over the years, as Holocaust survivors have aged, many who didn't speak, many did start to speak later in life.
Sure.
A result of the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum, a result of Schindler's List, a result of aging, a result of actually far more interest in this subject matter than there ever was. I mean, in the schools, it's being taught now in a way that it wasn't taught in the schools. Books are being published now, many more than ever before. So a little time, a little distance, a little healing, a little success of one's children, all of those things have allowed this subject matter to emerge. But still, to this day, there are many people like that person
and
who said that.
I would add just to say that one of the things that was critically important to survivors is that their stories, their experiences not die out with them.
Yeah.
And that we as children, their descendants and our children and others, continue to share the story. And even by having us on today,
so
you
important.
Give voice to that.
Thank you both for
Second
being here.
Second Generation Leadership Mission.